Hi, this is Bonnie Gillespie, and you're tuned in to The Work.
I'm so excited. Today on The Work, we have Tanya Perez. Yay!
Yay!
Tanya, thank you so much for being a part of this episode. I'm so happy you're here.
I'm really excited.
And that sounds excited. I love it. Let's start off with your pre-self-management for actors life, because as much as I believe that no one has had a life until they have self-management for actors, of course, there was a lot of career and a lot of life for you before we first intersected. And it was our first intersection that dinner at El Cholo in 2008?
Yes, 2008. I was literally just an hour ago going, it was the Mexican restaurant, and it was I did a play with Lily, and she was just like, and it was still kind of a germ of, am I going to be here or not? And then I was like, oh, I've known Bonnie for 8 years. Like, that blows my mind. Like, so much has happened in this like 8 years. So yeah.
Take us before that. What was some of your your humble beginnings as a creative?
So I was living in New York, and came up here right after college. So it was one of those, like, I don't know what I'm doing. I luckily got right into callbacks for Rent. So that launched me into getting a manager. And I had no idea about anything other than, oh, you're supposed to have representation and you're supposed to do these things. And this is what people are telling me. So I was just, you know, young and naive and just bumping around in the business. So I would do some plays and then I would get feedback. And I had, you know, I had the guidance of my manager and didn't really look anywhere else, because I was like, oh, well, she likes me, so I'm going to sign this crazy contract. I don't know anything about contracts, so I'm just going to sign it. And I think once after a number of years, you know, I booked some good work and went into crazy rooms. You know, I'm like, I'm going in for movies and wasn't prepared. And then finally, when I went to LA, and it was just kind of like, I'm just going to try it. I think after I started going, no, these people out here, they're business people. Like, New York is like, it's got that theater kind of like, oh, we can be more crafty. But once I went out there and I was like, oh, I need to get my shit together. That's when I was like, I was so happy to, you know, I think I felt like I just you landed in my lap. And then immediately when January hit, when the Cricket Feet showcase hit and I got cast in it, and I was like, I was still like, I don't know what I'm doing. And then I was like, no, I just got to learn how to do it. Like, just learn how to do the business side of it, take ownership of it, and really start crafting a career.
And so how did you start? Because people listening to this might say, yeah, I've just got to learn how to do it, but where and how, and there's so much noise now out there mm-hmm. about mm-hmm. the rules, and how do you sift through all that?
I think once I got, I call it, you know, you call it show Bible, and I just call it the Bible. You know, self-management for actors really was something where it was like, you know, you wrote something that was so digestible, and I could take it at my own time and then really understand that to stop looking at what I wasn't, I think was a big key through most of the principles. You know, it was like, you know, starting with branding and really, you know, going from mindset to application. I felt like once I started taking, like, slowing myself down, feeling like, oh, this is my goal up here. And I want to, you know, I want to make it. And then I went ahead and I started really seeing what that really meant. It helped me do it bit by bit, piece by piece. And I think that, you know, I mean, I still miss our time doing the classes together. And I, and it, you know, and it, it evolved. It was like, you know, it had run its course. And even for me, I was like, oh, now I'm off in the world with all of these tools because I'm being a conscious creative and conscious, like a business owner over just being, I'm just going to be an actor and I'm going to do these things. I'm going to try these things. I was like, no, I can now look at what works and what doesn't. Who am I? Who am I in this business? What am I castable as? I think one of the distinctive things that I remember sitting in class one day when my manager was like, oh, you're too fat for the business and business out there. And I remember, same look. Yeah.
I remember that. Oh.
And when that was something that was like just feeding into my insecurity, and then you're just like, then you're just castable for other things. And just looking at that, really looking at that and being able to hear it and be in that space, that's when I was just like, oh, now I know how to go to work. Now I know how to really figure out how to be here and look at all the things that I can do over, oh, I'm not thin enough, or I'm not this, or I'm not blonde, or I'm not that, you know, all the knots, and just taking the knot out and being like, what am I? That I think overall has really changed, and it keeps, you know, as I always, you know, when you're always like, you know, oh, I've learned that lesson, and that lesson keeps coming back, and it's like, oh no, now I know how to address that lesson and just kind of move it to the side because this is where I'm going with that kind of, with that lesson over and over again.
It evolves. It may be same lesson, but different tactics now because mm-hmm. you're smarter from having done it before and you recognize it sooner. So you don't have to go as far down sometimes and things like that.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
So,
and I just, you,
whatever became of this manager, because I know, you know, that this was a contract that you had gotten yourself into, when you first got out to New York, and ultimately there were several red flags of maybe this isn't the best possible fit. What, take us through that journey a little bit, if you can.
I can. And, you know, I recently saw her, last year, and, randomly, because she now is sharing an office with a casting director, and I had not realized that. And I walked in, and I was going in. This is for Jessica Jones, and I walked in, and then I heard her voice, and I was like, "Oh, wow! I'm gonna close this door. I'm not gonna have the same, you know, I'm not gonna have the emotional triggers that I had being with her for so long. I felt like I should have left her in year two and not in year eight with her. And it was just, you know, I mean, she did a lot of incredible things. I got into a lot of good doors, you know, and at the same time, I just didn't know what that meant, the relationship, and I didn't know how to end it. It's like being in a bad relationship, actually. And when I did it, and I just, it was just kind of like just ripping off a Band-Aid. And I'm like, let's not make this emotional anymore. This is business. This is actually what she taught me, is it's a business. And I needed to move on, found the right representation. So then when I saw her last year, I just walked into her office and I was like, hey, hi. Just want to say hey. And we hugged, and it was just like just a quick catch up, and I was like, that was really awesome. That for me, that was a huge closure. And you know, I mean, I think that as you know, I think as an artist, we do get in these relationships, especially when we're young, we don't know how to manage them. And you talk about this a lot. You talk about, you know, really nurturing relationships. But sometimes it's the experiential part of that you go, oh, now I understand it. And I mean, it's great. It's, you know, in some ways that's a wonderful journey, but it's really having representation that you really, you can use for a while, you know, like like a season, like you're using them for a season and then maybe it doesn't work out. and I needed enough maturity to really step away from it and move on to find the representation I have now, which I, you know, we're in love with each other. You know, it's a completely different dynamic.
And how was that process of finding the right rep?
So I had asked a girlfriend of mine who I knew, the agent I have now, and she was with him and she, and we both, I knew him actually, from New York. So I met him out in LA. But he had, he used to be a commercial casting director, at one agency and then decided to do his own, like branch out, and he went bi-coastal. So when I was out in LA and I was, you know, I mean, I was like any actor, I'm freaking out. I'm like, I'm in LA. I have no representation. I don't know how to get in the doors. I'm trying to get in the doors. You know, I'm going to workshops and trying to do meet and greets. But, you know, it was really one of the first times that I was just like, oh, I'm on my own. And then I was like, oh, I've always kind of been on my own.
Right.
I just had somebody who was, you know, who was helping me along. And now I just have to find who else I'm interested in. So I had tracked a girlfriend of mine who was doing quite well out there, and she was happy with him, and she just went ahead and made the introduction. I met him on a Tuesday, and we were signing papers within like 2 days.
Wow.
And he remembered me from New York. So it was one of those things. We had a good relationship already. So, you know, I want to say, in some ways I've gotten really lucky in my relationships with people in the industry. But I'm not going to also discredit the work that I've done, which
totally.
Is, I had to make the phone call. I had to, you know, show up. I had to, you know, make sure that I was ready for him too. You know, I'm like, do I have, you know, enough material on my reel? Do I have, you know, enough credits? Do I want to go with somebody who is bigger or somebody who is more boutique? You know, so it was in that time, especially when we were doing the showcase, it was really that time where I was just like, I'm really going to make conscious decisions on how to do my next steps.
That's so great. I think that mindfulness, rather than just, well, I want to be an actor, so this is what actors do, that strategic mindfulness, I think, makes all the difference.
Yeah.
Do you consider yourself a bi-market, bi-coastal, multi-market actor?
I will be multi-market in June. I'm actually the. Can we say who I'm? I mean, you can probably just IMDb it. I mean, so Avalon Artists is going. Yeah, I know. Yeah. So Avalon is has opened an office in Atlanta, which I'm really excited about. I know a lot of actors in that market, and he sent a email out and it was just like, if you're interested and if you can be local. And I'm like, I have, you know, I already have people with apartments. My cousin, he's like, you can have my house if you want it.
Awesome.
So I'm going to meet with them next month and, make it the try. Cause I get submitted out in LA as well, but, primarily I'm working here in New York, and I have to say it was really hard when I was being bi-coastal and I was in LA half the year and I was in New York and I didn't want to give up LA. And then I think when I just kind of just stripped it away and made the decision just to be solely in New York, but with the flexibility to fly out to LA, I started booking. Like it was just like all of a sudden here's all this work. And it was just like, okay, I think I just needed to open that possibility or reinvestigate New York in a different way. So I'm always, I mean, I love LA. It's, you know, I miss it a lot. I wish I could, you know, still have my home, but maybe one day. So.
And then homes everywhere. Why not?
Let's talk about it.
I know, girl. Let's talk about some of the bookings. You mentioned, you know, how the bookings started coming. Let's get specific. What are some things that you're proudest of that you've got coming up that you might want to let people be aware of? What's going on?
Yes. Okay. So I'm just going to, the Orange is the New Black was crazy. It was like the 101, I was like, I actually ended up booking it straight from an iPhone. Like it was just like bad lighting. And I was just like, but I did a unique take. And I was just like, here you go, blah, blah, blah. And then when I got the call, I was like, are you kidding me? That's great. No, awesome.
And because we hear myths a lot about the self-tape, like, no, you've got to go into a studio, you've got to pay money, you've got to have this backdrop and professional lighting, and you know that's bullshit because you are proof that you could do it off an iPhone, and it's about the acting.
Yeah. Yeah. I started doing clever lead-ins or clever slates instead of it being like, hi, my name is Tanya Perez and blah, 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 blah. Here you go. I would sometimes, you know, like I've done, and this is the ones that I've booked where I was like, here's a tour of my apartment. And I would just do it for like, you know, 2 seconds and then be like, okay. And then do the scene or I just was, I know for Orange is the New Black, I was like, I'm teaching 150 nurses. It was for a nurse. And I was just like, I hope you like it. that was great, and then that literally led me to a flurry of just auditions for the New York market. So everything from series regular to recur to co-stars to guest stars, you know, it was just like they were just kind of like all the offices were seeing me for all kinds of things. Blue Bloods was fantastic because it was one of those, it was a cops and robbers like action sequence in the middle of Chinatown. And I was screaming my head off. And it was like, you know, things were getting shot at. And then I just looked up at the building when we were doing the scene. And there was this like little Chinese woman just looking out going, just shocked. And I was like, we're making movies. We're making TV. And Jessica Jones was like that as well. Jessica Jones was like, Jessica Jones was a real amazing acting class because David Tennant was in the scene, and I'm sorry for people who I didn't know who he was, and all my my friends who were big Doctor Who fans did. And when I told them who I was in the scene with afterwards, they were just like, are you kidding me? And I was like, I didn't know who he was, but he was a really good actor because he did 10 minute takes. And we were there for 14 hours, but he did these, it was all on him. And it was all him just doing this magnificent dialogue, did not skip a beat every time. And I know for me, one of the last shots was a reaction shot for me. And everyone was tired. It was 2 a.m. and came in. Oh, you need me? Okay, great. And he would just go ahead and do the whole stuff, everything. I can't tell you how much I was like, oh my God, this is not just showing up to work. This is like really just being involved. And watching him work that way was like, that's how I want to do it all the time.
A question for you on that. How much of that process do you believe is allowed because of the platform for which a show like Jessica Jones was created? Like, would it have been different if we were talking, this was a CBS show that you had to like turn on, turn off, in and out? Is there a little more leeway creatively because we're talking a streaming service rather than broadcast television?
I think so. I think it's a number of things. I think it's one, it's David Tennant. So, you know, I know that the director had a relationship to David Tennant. So they just kind of just let him go and do what he needed to do in order to get to that place. I think it is also because it was Netflix, you know, Netflix is invested, you know, you know, so much money in this, the Marvel series, and it's the Marvel universe. So they're shooting like it is a movie, not like a, you know, just banging out paint by numbers kind of stuff. Because working, you know, now that I've, this is my, you know, I've now done 3 CBS shows. It is different. You can just see the difference between how Netflix shows are being shot and how network shows are being shot.
Do you have a preference?
I like it all. I do. I like it all. I mean, I like the residuals from network a lot better than I do from streaming. It's, thank you, Blue Bloods. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Those checks come up and I'm like, oh, you're paying my rent today.
Isn't that great? Oh.
Yeah. So, yeah. And it, you know, I mean, I just, and then, you know, my latest thing is I just did Brain Dead, which is the brand new CBS summer show from the creators of Good Wife. And it's a complete departure from it. It's a, you know, it's like, it's an equivalent to a zombie show, but with politics.
Because why not?
I know.
That's great. And when will we be able to see that? Because you like literally just shot that yesterday. Okay.
Yesterday morning. And they were quick, man. We were there for probably 45 minutes shooting total time. And it was just like at 8:55, they were like, did awesome. Here you go. Bye. You're wrapped. And I was like, what? That was it? Okay, awesome. I mean, it was so much fun. There was a little improv involved. And they, I know that will air starting June 13th. So I'm in episode 7 of, I think the pickup that they got.
Excellent.
So.
And then what else? You're also doing theater, if I recall correctly. Okay.
I'm doing Shakespeare.
Girl.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
I know. Yes, I'm going away to do Shakespeare in North Carolina. So I'm really excited. It's been 10 years since I've been in a theater that I don't have to be the boss. I didn't have to write it. I didn't have to create it, and I didn't have to produce it. So it's been a long time to go to do some really awesome theater.
But that's interesting that you bring that up, that because you are truly a content creator. You have created your one woman show, toured it around. I know we saw it out here in LA. You've had it up in New York, I believe other places as well. What is that process like for you when you're wearing so many different hats? Are you able to turn off producer brain and go into actor mode fully ever?
It's hard. I for my solo show, I hired a director who I've done a number of shows with her in New York. And I felt like that was the smartest thing, because she would sit down, she'd be like, stop being the producer, stop being the writer. I need you to be the actor. And, you know, just having that made me go ahead and go, okay, I'm going to be the actor right now. And then I can really do the work that I created and really investigate what it is that I was saying, what works, what didn't work. And then we can go to the table after we're done to go ahead and be like, all right, let's go ahead and talk writer and do the writer stuff. And then when it came to producing, it was everything else. I don't think I slept those several years that I was producing and doing the show. And I was doing it both in LA and New York, and it was great. It was wonderful. It was exhausting.
But worth doing.
Totally worth doing. Like I have to say, I learned on so many levels how to really think about the things I want to say and the characters and the roles that I want to do, beyond it just being like, oh, I want to work for, you know, I want to be on Breaking Bad, or I want to be on this show, or I want to be on that show. It was really like, okay, I created things I wanted to do, and now I had to also find the money and find the spaces and get the reviews and, you know, do everything. So, I mean, it's, I think every, I want to say every creative needs to do a journey like that, whether it's a web series, whether it's a short film, whether it's a solo show, whether it's just like, you know, doing their own stand up. I think there's something so valuable in creating your own work that you can actually bring into the work you get hired for.
Totally agree. Absolutely. I think it's sort of, we did crowdfunding for the fourth edition of Self-Management for Actors. And I said, every creative needs to crowdfund at least one project in their lives, mm-hmm. just so you really understand the logistics involved in bringing together enough money to produce anything, whether it's a $2,000 budget or a $20,000 budget or beyond, because going through that process is incredibly educational. And you can hear about it, you can read about it, but something about being the one that's staying up at night, as you mentioned, you didn't sleep for years because you were in producer brain as you're trying to rest. I totally know how that goes. I think there's something really valuable to that, and it kind of informs your creative work going forward. Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's our babies.
You know,
you have your babies. These are not, you know, I actually, a friend of mine who's a mother, and she was just like, you can't call your art baby. And I was just like, yes, I can.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yes, I can.
Yeah. When people say, you know, cause I'm in my 40s and people say, oh, well, you don't have any kids. It's, oh, and I'm like, are you kidding me? I have 1,000 fucking children and they are all over the world showing up on red carpets, winning things. They are killing it and crushing it. I have so many babies.
You do. Can I wait? I'm going to do that. Wait.
Yeah. Right.
Yes. Yes. I'm trying to get to 1,000 and it's going to take a while.
It will take a while. And you can stick around a little bit, Tanya, to do some Q&A if anybody who's here with us on the live broadcast has questions. Okay, so we'll open anybody who wants to hop in with a question for Tanya, definitely prepare to do that. But meanwhile, how can people keep up with what you've got going on, stay aware of your work, websites, social media? What do we do to stay in touch with you?
Okay. So, I'm on the Twitter, I'm on the Instagram, and, stealing that from you. So my Twitter handle is dollseam, dollseam, like a doll seam. And my Instagram is DJModelT500. So they're all aliases, but it's a party. I have embraced social media. I know, Bonnie, you know how much I hated it when it was first around. And it's so much fun. Cause it's like, I can brand myself. And then also I can like, just say like crazy things. And then it's just become so much fun. So I use those two spaces. I mean, my website's TanyaPerez .nyc because I can't get the .com.
Damn it.
It's $2,000 now.
Well, you're going up, girl. Or whoever's squatting on it is, you know.
Oh, we have some
coming a hot property, of course. No, Keith tried to get KeithJohnson.com and he's like, they want like 10 grand just to even start the conversation. It's like, that's not in the budget at all. Fuck that. So TanyaPerez.nyc. I know someday I'll go, yes, baby, you're worth 10 grand. Here we go. But no, not today.
You need to crowdfund that.
Right? And then what would he do with it? Yeah, okay. That's another story for another time. Hong has jumped on with a question that I want to field here, which is great. Hong, thank you again for joining us. The question is, first time producer, what tips might you have? Do we volunteer to work on someone else's set before producing our own, whether it's a web series or a short, to get more experience? Take us through for Hong and anyone else who's approaching that first time producer status. Where to begin?
The great thing is you can now go up like on, I would say connect with YouTube because they still have their creator labs and you can still take They have their videos online, and then they have their spaces. They have several different spaces all over the world. So you can connect with them to kind of learn certain things. I, as a first time producer, just jumped right in. So I got a camera. I ended up, you know, getting friends to do stuff. A lot of the writing was mismatched, and I had a partner to do it. So I would say, you know, it's easier when you start collecting your little army or your crew to see who can do what, and then start making something. I wanted to make something on a low end and then kept building. So, you know, it's really up to how you want to approach. If you have an idea, you can even shoot it. And if you hate it, scrap it. And then you can figure out how do I really want to do it if you feel that this is a story I want to tell, and then go the next steps, which is finding the right people who can shoot it, finding the right people who can edit it. I will say this, to backtrack. I will say invest in sound. A good sound person is going to make anything that you do amazing. I would invest in a good shooter, somebody who knows how to shoot, somebody knows how to shoot things that you may not be able to communicate. And with any of those people, make sure that they're people who are on board. You don't want to hire somebody who's not invested, because then they're just not going to care.
Amen. Yeah, because that's, at the end of the day, you're, you know, spending a lot of money, a lot of time, a lot of resources, obviously. But that I wrote down the way you said this, collecting your army. I think that's so vitally important, because surrounding yourself with people who say, I'm in, whatever you've got going on, I believe this can be done. And then it's not about, well, I got a paycheck, so I'm showing up, but I don't actually ultimately care what the finished product is. You really are creating a group of, like a repertory company that you're creating, you know, out of this community. And I think that's so smart.
Yeah. Cause then it starts becoming, then you want to start working with other people, and you want to work on their project, or you want to go ahead and do that. Yes. I think that you actually should, if you're curious about it and you don't know quite yet what you want to do, jump on somebody else's crew. Because that will give you an idea on things that you like and things that you don't like, or how you would be able to do that next. And then people are going to be like, hey, you're shooting something great. I'm free for the next month. Let's create something.
So, I'm glad you said that, Tanya, because, for instance, when Keith and I first met in 2001, he had never been on a film set. And I, you know, grew up on sets. And here I was doing a makeup job for exactly like that, a friend's project. He needed somebody who could do makeup, and I had a kit. So I was like, sure, I'll be your makeup girl for $50 a day, whatever. Sounds great. So I was helping out, and I said, could you get my boyfriend who just moved to town a PA job? Because he's never been on a set. And I was like, former Marine, he could do PA all day. He knows, like, be first on set, be last to leave, clean up everybody else's shit, get yelled at. You're perfect PA. And
it's awesome.
In that 3-week shoot, he learned what everybody else's job was, and he never left the set. Like, he didn't take breaks. He was constantly observing and absorbing everything, like soaking things up like a sponge and asking questions and picking people's brains when obviously the time was appropriate to chat, because he really wanted to respect the storytelling process, but he was hungry to learn what each job is. And those 3 weeks were like going to grad school for any kind of self-producer or being a utility player on anybody else's project as an actor or crew.
Yeah. I think that, you know, I mean, I can't remember which David Mamet book it was, but it was something that he was just like, you're going to learn from doing. You're going to learn from doing. I mean, you can read up all you want, but then once you're on set and realizing, oh, ice cream's going to melt. And we only got one, so we can only do this in 3 takes. Then you realize, oh, that's the doing part. That's the experiential part. You're just going to have to figure it out. And then all the other stuff is gonna, you're gonna either learn that over time or you're gonna do trial and error. But if you can soak it up and you can find places to do that, and you know, and LA is great for that. I mean, you know, I see it now going to set here as well, where it's just like you can see the chain of the command. And I love the PAs who are just like who are present and alive and they're ready to go. And then you see the other ones who are sitting back texting, and you're just like, you're wasting your time, not just the production's time, but your time, because my God, how awesome is this? How much learning can you get and soak up? I mean, I do it as an actor. I don't like sitting back in my seat. I'm like, I want to see the other actors on set. I want to see everybody from background to, you know, the AD to what's going on. And I'm always like, I'm just like a, you know, like a hungry puppy, just watching everything. So,
soak it up. So smart. So smart. Tanya, thank you. Let's do a little brand prob. You ready?
Yes.
All right.
Okay.
So here we go. What is the role you were born to play that you haven't yet attempted?
Evil. I'm getting close. I'm getting okay. So close. People are like now casting me as bitch. And I'm like, oh yes, finally.
No, it only took decades. One. Yes. Oh, awesome. Okay. You are on the red carpet. You are headed toward your first big awards show where you're actually nominated for something. And you are asked what it was like to work with your co-star who has had a meltdown. What do you say?
You'll just have to see the takes.
Turn it back into the work. Very good. Very good. Very good. Now, it's a tough one, right?
Yeah,
because you know that there's going to be that moment where you just worked with somebody and there's something, some scandalous TMZ something, and you've got to be prepared for, what do I say? Do I get into the politics of it? Or what vehicle do you roll up to this red carpet? What's your vehicle of brand?
I was going to say a horse. You know, I'm going to leave it like that. That's, you know, it's going to be something ridiculous.
You're like, valet this. Give him a carrot.
Actually, no, I would do. That's something that's actually been like, I'm like, I could do, you know, I know in New York, they don't like the horse and buggy thing, but I was like, I think I could rock that at a red carpet.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's fantastic. And if you can live and work anywhere, what is the place? What is the one that feels most on brand for you, the type of work that's done there and the lifestyle that you achieve by living in that place?
It's easy, New York. I'm a New Yorker. I need breaks, but I'm a true diehard New Yorker. So
I'm gonna tell you, Tanya, having known you since 2008 and having seen you on both coasts multiple times, you seem so fully yourself when we hang out in New York, in a way that's a little different. I mean, and believe me, I love hanging out with you wherever we hang out, whenever we hang out. But there's a different Tanya in New York that's fired up and alive in a different way. So I'm glad you said that.
Yeah, I mean it. You know, I think that I have to say I cherished my tenure in LA, and it taught me so much more how to be myself in New York. I think that was one of the things. I was just like, I needed to go away to come back and really settle in and be here. So
awesome.
Thank you. Thank you for saying that.
You are fabulous. And I'm so glad we got to share this time together on this episode of The Work. You're actually our first ever return guest of the work, because you did an episode with us in season one. You were one of our very first interviews.
I remember, and I was so scared. I was like, what am I going to say? What's going to come out of my mouth? So, oh my God, Bunny, I love you. And I think this is fantastic. And I want to see the work on network. So I'm going to put that out there.
Let's make it happen, girl. With hot guests like you, I see it as an eventuality very soon. Let's do it. Remind everybody where they can keep up with you, please. One last time.
Twitter, Dalseem. You can follow me at Dalseem. And Instagram, DJ Model T500.
Mm. How do you spell the on that? No?
I don't know.
No, I don't know. Okay. Love you, Tanya. Thank you so much.
Love you too.
All right, my friends, this has been Bonnie Gillespie for another episode of The Work. Thank you so much for joining me here. Please join me over at BonnieGillespie.com for all sorts of goodness between episodes. And until next time, stay ninja.